Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You're back in the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren, and my co-host today is John Copenhaver. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing well. How are you, Al?
I'm delicious. Hey, how was the movie? So you got all moved and settled and you're all happy.
Yeah, I am in Virginia now. So thank God that's over.
Wow, you can have ham.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Good ham.
Good ham instead of that other stuff in Washington. Hey, so now today we are talking to a crime fiction writer. We're going to be talking about his new book. It's called Watch Her. And it's Edwin Hill. Thank you for being here, Edwin.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So, Edwin, you haven't been on the show before, so maybe for the listeners, it looks like this is your third book. So how did you get into writing?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it was a pretty long path for me to get into writing. I was a big reader when I was a kid. I always really loved to read. My parents would take us to the library and once a week and we'd get a big stack of books. But I sort of discovered crime writing when I was probably maybe 10 or 11 years old. My parents used to take us on these month-long family camping trips. And one day we would get in this yellow Bronco and we just kind of drive across the country. And one day we stopped at a gas station. I was sort of in that time period between reading children's literature and reading adult literature where I didn't quite know what to read. And back then you could still buy paperback books at gas stations. And my parents bought me a copy of an Agatha Christie novel called The Seven Dials Mystery. And I read it and I loved it. I loved everything about it. For anyone who hasn't read it, it's one of her earlier novels. Mm-hmm. It's set in the 20s. It's at a manor house. There's a character named Bundle. And I loved everything about it. I loved the language. I loved the puzzle of it. I loved all of the characters. And I finished it and I thought to myself, this is exactly what I want to do with my life, write crime fiction. And it only took me about 35 years to figure out how to do it.
So what was the point that you actually started writing? And I guess it's really interesting to find a point where you feel confident enough to write a fiction book and feel it should be published.
Yeah. I mean, I would say my first book is called Little Comfort, and I spent a long, long time with it. And I had a lot of false starts. I think that's very typical for writers. I mean, writing is kind of it's sort of nebulous. You think to yourself, can I do this? You personally, I'm like full of self-doubt. So I had all sorts of self-doubt as I was doing it. And I sort of treated it as a hobby for a long time. I will say I did go and get my MFA, my master's in fine arts from Emerson College in creative writing. So I did put some dedication to it. But I also, you know, I had a career, I had another job. I worked very hard at that job. But the whole time I was sort of always called by writing. And what really changed it for me though was in 2010, exactly 10 years ago, I got a new job. I had worked at one, I worked in publishing. I worked at one publishing house and I moved to the next publishing house. And I managed to negotiate a month off in between my jobs. And that actually changed my whole life, that month off. I'd always wanted to try writing a novel. I thought to myself, I'd heard of this NaNoWriMo thing. And I didn't do it during November, which is traditionally NaNoWriMo month. But I thought, you know, people say you can write a draft of a novel in a month. Why don't I just give that a try since I have this month off? So I applied the principles of NaNoWriMo and I wrote every day. I wrote, you know, about 1500 words a day. And at the end of the month, I had a really terrible first draft of a novel. And you know, I had hoped that it would be better than it was, and it wasn't. And so then I spent, again, sort of treating it as a hobby. I spent the next 2 or 3 years working on it, mostly on the weekends. Once in a while, I'd get up in the morning and work on it too. And then at the end of 3 years, I was like, you know what, this is not bad. I showed it to a few people, and then I started querying agents. And, you know, I went from there. The story is much, much, much longer than what I'm telling right here, and much more, there were more challenges. But those are the basic building blocks.
Well, how do you find the publishing world now? I mean, considering that there's so many self-published, and then there's so many small publishings, and then there's so many paid for, there's just so much stuff out there now. It's a sea of publishing. How did you feel about getting into to being published by a publisher?
Oh, well, I mean, I'll say this. I think there are lots of paths to success available to people now, which is awesome. I mean, think about what the paths to publishing success used to be, and now you have many, many more that you can follow. And I always tell new authors, find the path that works for you, and that might be self-publishing, that might be with a small press, it could be any number of paths. I like working with a publisher. I like my editor. I like working with a publisher. I'm comfortable with the bookmaking process, and I like that my publisher handles some things that I wouldn't necessarily be good at, and I rely on them to do those things. I think for people who are good at multitasking, good at managing large projects, and good at sort of pulling in resources from all over the place, self-publishing can be a really awesome option if that works out for you.
Wow. So how do you come up with the idea behind your mystery? So when you're talking about this, it's a Hester Thursby mystery, and this is book 3 of 3. So you've put a lot of time and thought into this. So I find this fascinating because I write true crime, so I'm kind of already know what I'm writing about. So how do you get your characters to actually deal with a crime, and like how does that all come together?
Well, it's been different for every book. I'm actually working on my fifth book right now. Again, with my first book, again, no one is ever waiting for your first book, so you can sit with it forever and ever and ever. That was sort of inspired by a true crime story. If you remember the Clark Rockefeller case here in Boston. Clark Rockefeller was this guy who pretended to be a member of the Rockefeller clan.
Oh, right. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And it turned out he wasn't. And when his story sort of unraveled, he wound up going on the run with his young daughter. And that's when it became a national story. And during that time that he was on the run, it turned out they connected him to another murder in California. And it turned out he was a German national. He'd been pretending to be different people for many years. So I read that, and like a good crime novelist, I was like, oh, that might make a good story. And so if you read my first book, you'll see the seeds of that story in there. It's not really based on Clark Rockefeller at all. And from there, because I write a series, one of the nice things is that I have some recurring characters. And so I have to pay attention to their storylines and like their emotional storylines. And so a lot of the stories will come out of where Hester has a longtime boyfriend named Morgan. A lot of the stories come out of where Hester and Morgan are with their relationship. And then the mystery is sort of not secondary to that, but it's a result of that. Right now with this book that I just published, in the second book, I'd sort of put Hester and Morgan through a lot of emotional trials and tribulations. So I really wanted to make sure that they were in a happier place in this book. And that sort of drove a lot of the story as well.
Yeah, because you have to be very careful then when you have reoccurring characters or people that are in several books, you can't forget something that they might say or do in a previous book.
Oh, gosh, no. You know, if you watch TV shows from the 70s or 80s, you'll have characters that have a brother one season and then three sisters the next season. And it's like no one will put up with that anymore. You really have to make sure that things line up. So that's one of the, I was just talking to someone about this yesterday. You also make decisions in your series that you sort of have to stick with. And I told, there's this one character, she's a very minor character that comes back here and there in the series. Her name's Carrie, C-A-R-Y. And when I first came up with her as a character, I was sort of being coy about whether she was a man or a woman. And she's obviously a woman. But now, whenever I use her in the story, I'm always annoyed with myself that I just didn't spell her name C-A-R-R-I-E so that it was clear and I didn't have to make that obvious every time.
I'm just wondering, if you've got characters doing things in the first two books, and then the third book comes up and you're writing about this mystery, and because of something your character did in a previous book, you can't always have them fit what you want them to do. So how do you deal with that? Do you bring in other characters to fill that spot, or?
Yeah, I mean, except for Hester and Morgan. Hester and Morgan, and they have a niece that they take care of named Kate. They sort of have to be around. But besides the three of them, you know, I could always come up with a new character. There definitely is a cast of recurring characters in the series, and I like to use them. But if they don't fit the bill, I'll definitely come up with someone else.
So I'm sorry.
No, you go for it. Go for it.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. I love amateur detectives, and Hester is a great example of one. Like, what, you know, why were you drawn to an amateur detective, and like, what are some of the challenges with writing them?
Oh, sure. You know, all this comes down to my first book, because of course the first book turned into the series. When I first started the book, and again, I spent so many years developing that first book. When I first conceived of the book, it was like an anti-hero book. The main characters were the antagonists. They were these two guys, they're serial killers. Their names are Sam Blaine and Gabe DiPersio. And I worked on Sam, that novel that I wrote during that month that I had off, Hester wasn't even in the novel. I wrote, you know, 50,000 words about these two guys. And eventually, because I was sort of teaching myself how to do this as I was going along, I was like, you know what, this book really needs a protagonist. And when I decided that it needed a protagonist, I was like, well, I'm already writing about two guys. So I don't want to write about three guys. So I'm going to make the protagonist a woman. That was like my entire decision-making process. And now here I am on my third book about this person. And so I came up with Hester. I sort of filled in her world. And I definitely wanted it to be an amateur sleuth. Mm-hmm. At first, the novel was going to be funnier, but you can't really write funny novels about serial killers. So it wound up, the novels are on the darker side. And the first novel is dark. And so once I realized it was going to be a darker novel, at first she was going to be like a baker or something like that. But then once it became darker, I was like, let's do something else. So then I thought, why don't I make her a psychologist? So she was a psychologist for a little while. And then, but there are lots and lots of books with psychologists as the mm-hmm. protagonist. And I thought other people are doing that better than I'm going to be able to do it. And one day I lived near Harvard at the time, Harvard University. And I was walking through campus and I came up on Widener Library, which is the world's biggest research library. And I thought to myself, you know, librarians are really curious people and they have access to data. They have access to information that not everyone has access to. And they actually know what to do with the information. They know where to pull it together and then how to analyze it. I thought that would be kind of interesting for a amateur sleuth. And that, so she became a librarian. And this all took like 2 years for me to get there.
I guess it's good that it took you a while though, because now you're stuck with Hester. I mean, a good way, stuck with Hester, but she's, I think just, I love that choice of an amateur, because there's just so much amateur detectives, I feel like, have access to, you know, people in a different way that like you have in a police procedural, where police procedures are always about going and interviewing people. They're very direct in a lot of ways. Do you find, but also with an amateur detective, you've got to figure out a way for the amateur detective character to, you know, investigate, I guess. And I mean, have you had challenges along lines of trying how to figure out those, like how to get her into the middle of a mystery, I guess, essentially what I'm asking.
Yeah. You know, I think you can run up into this thing where like how many times can this be plausible? And like why isn't the FBI investigating this character? So like the first one I think is easy because it's just like someone stumbled upon a mystery. And I'm on my third book. My second book, it was very organic, and the missing case was actually very much related to Hester's own family without giving much away. And then, so this third one, I did start to ask myself, how can I logically bring Hester into a mystery? And she does have a friend whose name is Angela White, who's appeared in all three of the books. And Angela has a very major role in the third book. And I purposely did that because she's a detective with the Boston Police Department. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to pair Hester with an actual law enforcement person, mm-hmm. just to make it a little bit more plausible. Though the next one, I'm not working on a Hester Thursby book right now. I'm working on a standalone. The next Hester Thursby book, you know, it's back to being very amateur. Angela's always in the books, but she'll have a smaller role in that book.
Now, what made you want to do a standalone?
Oh, I just thought it would be fun to explore. You know, Hank Phillippe Ryan, who's another crime writer who you may have heard of, she says this really well. When you write a standalone, like anyone can do anything. Like, so you can kill off whoever you want. People can go from being bad to good or good to bad. When you write a series, you know, your Hester and Morgan, they can't kill anyone. And they, you know, they can't get killed. So, you know, it does limit you a little bit. So I just wanted the freedom of being able to do whatever I wanted.
Yeah, that seems like a real challenge of the, I'm the standalone guy. So both in my writing and in my life. No, but like, I think that, you know, I think that's the limitation, right, of the series, is that you are locked into those characters, but that's also the joy of it too. So,
oh yeah. Yeah. Gosh. And it's really, I mean, it was funny to go back to sort of square one with the standalone. Because my last two books, well, I've written three, but my last two books, I've had like a lot of the characters, I already knew them really well. And with this book, I had to come up with all the characters from scratch, which was, you know, I had to flex my creative muscles a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think that you will like continue to sort of weave in standalones with your series, or are you sort of in that sort of exploring that phase of things?
I will probably do a mixture of both. I definitely like to, I've enjoyed this standalone, and but I definitely am interested in getting back to this, resolving a certain storyline that I left a little bit dangling at the end of the third Hester Thursby book. So people will definitely want to, that I definitely want to explore that.
So where do you get your characters from? Like, do you draw from people you know, or is it just people you see in the street or in a coffee shop, or how do you develop these characters?
A lot of them come, you know, all characters come from you, even the most horrible ones, especially the most horrible ones. So, you know, I'll pull certain things from myself for each of the characters. But then I try not to base them on anyone. I try not to base them on people I know. I think, I'll pull a little attribute from one person or here and there. I just try and base them on, to be honest, the needs of the story, and sort of what types of personality need to drive the story forward. So for example, in my current novel, which is called Watch Her, all my novels so far have been told from multiple points of view, even though they're Hester Thursby novels. And this novel has four point of view characters. One of the point of view characters is a woman named Maxine Polakowski, who runs a for-profit university. And, you know, I wanted her to be she's an executive at a large organization. And so I wanted her to be tough the way an executive at a large organization would be. And someone who was forthright and someone who knew how to take charge. So I drew on, you know, I was an executive at a large corporation too. So I did draw some of that from myself, but I also thought about, like, what are the qualities that you need in a character like that? And especially, she's a woman, I'm a man, like, what does a woman need when they're in a position like that, that a man doesn't necessarily need? But when I developed her, I also did some things that made my life easier. I made her character and myself the exact same age. And so which is helpful because the experiences that you have are very specific to how old you are. And so when you're trying to develop a character and you don't have to think about things like that, it just makes it a lot easier.
So how do you feel about your characters? I ask that because a lot of the crime fiction people we talk to seem to have a real affection for their characters, like they're children or something. What's your relationship like?
Oh, I always love my characters. I love the good ones and I love the bad ones. I really Hester and Morgan are really are two of my buddies at this point, and I put them through a lot. And I was really happy with the way this book came out. That there was some happiness in there that I hadn't touched on before with that couple, and it was nice to be able to bring them there. People talk about how characters take over the novel and stuff like that. I like it when a minor character will sort of pop off the page, even if they stay as a minor character. But they become a tool that you, that character becomes a tool that you can really use to tell that story. And sometimes you'll have a minor character show up in one scene, and you realize that that character just has a more important role that you didn't realize. I wrote an unpublished manuscript that I'm sitting on right now. And there was one character that I really liked in it, who came out of necessity. There was a guy in the novel going to a party. And I thought to myself, well, he's probably not going to the party by himself. He probably has a date. So I just invented this date for him, this guy, woman named Alice. And then Alice started sort of taking on this little life of her own as I was writing the novel. And she didn't wind up being a main character.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But she did wind up reappearing, I think maybe 4 other times during the novel. And they were really pivotal times in the novel. And I felt like the character was strong enough so that when she did reappear after having been absent from the page for a long time, that the reader would be able to remember who she was, which was also really helpful.
I was just wondering now, so when you're writing a book, when things are going on, like let's say 2020, and a lot of the tension and the COVID and, you know, just all of the stuff going on, does that seep into the way you write? Like, I know it's not what you're writing about, but just the overall stress and things like that going on around you in the world, does it make you kind of go darker?
Well, my novels are already pretty dark. so I would say it. I mean, this has been such a strange year to write. So I handed in the novel that's about to publish. I handed that in February to my editor. He got me back edits maybe a month later. And then by then the world had shut down. And then I was working on my copy edits in the middle of May. And asking myself, do I need to incorporate this new world into this novel that's about to publish? So I did, like, as I was going through my copy edits, I was just trying to see whether I needed to change anything. And ultimately, I decided I didn't want to. Because, you know, I think many people believe this, I feel this way. I kind of want to live in a world where we go to parties and go to bars and stuff. But I also had this weird creative burst at, like right around that time, and I wrote a lot of what I think is pretty good writing. Then I started the novel I'm working on right now, and that novel's been more challenging. I've just been I haven't been stuck creatively. I just feel like I'm moving a lot slower creatively than I have before. So I don't know. I'll be curious when I finish this novel, when I look, I'm going to like keep your question in mind when I finish this novel and read it through and just see how the mentality that I'm in right now, how it affects the prose.
Yeah. Cause I find personally that it did slow me down and it did affect my work. And there's some people we've talked to that have, completely shut down, and then mm-hmm. others that have just been totally loving it. So yeah. You know,
I've definitely slowed me way down. It's just been so much interference. It's like the humming anxiety behind it does for me personally take away, you know. So it's interesting, a lot of people have said similar kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think because it's unresolved. I think it's not like it's just a bomb went off or 9/11 or something happened and then you build back. This is something that people, I don't feel like it's been resolved, especially with the election and the never ending drama and not having a confident, solid outcome of anything, you know, in this year. So.
2020 is going to be no one is ever going to forget 2020.
No way.
Well, I mean, I hope not, because I would hate to see the U.S. go through this again in 20, 30 years, the same similar sort of behaviors where you've got, you know, anti-maskers and you've got all this weird stuff going on and conspiracies. And you're hoping that it never gets this bad again, where it's so divided, I guess is the word, you know. It's kind of crazy, but so what's your advice to new writers?
Oh, be perseverant. I mean, just I have a lot of pieces of advice, but when it really comes down to it, believe in yourself and keep moving forward. And you know, also find a group of people that you can rely on.
Yeah. Click your heels 3 times.
Yeah.
That's what so that's fascinating. So is there this is kind of an unusual question, but I like with crime writers, is there an underlying theme or thing that you want someone to get out of reading one of your books besides the story, besides the main story of the crime and something like that? But when they walk away, is there something you want them to be thinking about?
Oh, well, my books are all about family and this doesn't sound dark at all, but my books are all about family and what family means and what it means to have a family and who are the members of that family. Hester and Morgan, our central characters, are they're sort of reluctant misanthropes, I think, and so they sort of present as people who are who push people away. But as the series evolves, you see that what they do is they're constantly expanding their circle and they're constantly welcoming broken people into their lives and helping them. Move forward with their lives. So Hester invites more people. Morgan's a veterinarian, so he's always bringing animals into the house too. And so their circle is constantly expanding and their family is constantly expanding as well.
Wow. So it's kind of just, it's more of a family orientated murder.
Well, it's about community and family and found family and what it means to belong to a group of people.
Yeah.
While murder is happening in the background. Wow.
You're saying to have a good family, you have to have a good murder in the background.
That's exactly right.
You know, a good Thanksgiving, everyone's killing. Oh, that's great. So where do you see yourself in 10 years? Just doing the same?
Oh, gosh. Well, I hope so. I mean, I hope that I'm a multimillionaire in 10 years. No, I mean, I love writing. I don't think the novel is going anywhere, and I don't think the book is going anywhere, our original technology. And so, you know, storytelling, I think, is here to stay. I hope I can evolve as a storyteller as our world and our societies evolve. And so 10 years, I hope I've got 10 more books published.
Yeah. So other than Agatha Christie, who do you like? Who's your big influences, or what influences you when you're writing?
Well, I always start with, there's one book that really helped change my life. And it's a novel. I'd written another novel a long time ago. I got an agent for it. It didn't sell. It was very depressing. And so I gave up writing for about 10 years. And in about 2000, right before I got that month off, I read Case Histories by Kate Atkinson, which is a mystery novel. And it was really, really important for me, because that book does exactly what I try to do with my own novels. It's very character driven. It's an amateur sleuth, but it's funny and yet dark at the same time. I think she does it 50 million times better than I do, but I always try to write sort of in that same style. And I read that book and I thought to myself, oh, this author is doing exactly what I would like to do if I were to write a novel. Certainly I can try that and accomplish it. And just being able to see that Kate Atkinson could do that was really important to me. So I've read all of those Jackson Brody mysteries. I think there are five of them now. I think they're all wonderful. I also really like Tana French, who writes a series in set in Dublin. I think she's American, but the series is set in Dublin. And I really, those are procedurals, but I love, they're also very character-based. They're linked, like each novel is linked to the next novel, but they use a whole, she uses different sets of characters in each of them, which I think is really clever. And I think she just creates a really interesting world set in Dublin. I also love Laura Lippman a lot. I like that she moves between, I like that she moves between serious work and standalone. And I love the way she uses Baltimore as a character in her novels. And I love all of her characters in all of her novels. I think she does, she just creates really interesting worlds. And my last big name influence would be Louise Penny, who writes a series set in Southern Quebec, for people who don't know. It's also, it's sort of like, it's got cozy aspects to it, but it's actually a pretty dark series. And I love the way she creates community in there. That's highly influential in my books as well.
That's interesting, you know, and I talked to Carol Poe, C.S. Poe. We talked about a city being a character or a town. Do you find that real important in your books to make it its own character without speaking?
Yeah, I mean, my books are set in New England. I live in Boston. Hester and Morgan live in Somerville, which is the town right next door to Boston. And I use all of New England in the series. So in the first book, the action takes place in Beacon Hill, which is a neighborhood in Boston. And then a lot of the action takes place in New Hampshire, out in the wilds of New Hampshire near the Lake District there. The second book takes place in Somerville, but the most of the action takes place on an island off the coast of Maine. And then this third book takes place here in Boston in a neighborhood called Jamaica Plain. And what I really like about New England is that you have a very varied landscape in kind of a small area. You can go from the ocean to the mountains. You can go from the city to very rural relatively quickly. And you can also use the seasons, obviously. You know, we have very defined seasons here in New England, so I like to use that as well. And each of the novels has exploited the landscape here, definitely.
Well, I think it's important in the book, don't you?
Oh God, yes.
Yeah. So what do you have you ever looked back at your very first books or very first writings and kind of cringed, or how do you feel about them if you do?
Well, I will tell you this story. So I had this novel that I wrote 20 years ago. It came out of my MFA program and I got an agent for it. It didn't sell. Super bummer. And then so I was getting started on my third book, the one that just came out. And I thought, well, why don't I dust off that novel that didn't sell and see if I can do something with it quickly. So I pulled it up. I read about 10 pages. I closed the document. I said, there's a reason why that didn't sell.
Yeah, but do you think that's kind of a natural thing to go back to? Like I think what I'm getting at is each book you do, doesn't it get a little better just in itself because...
Well, writing is a skill, so
yeah,
any skill you're going to improve at. I mean, I think each of my books did things, there are things that I really like about each of my books, and there are probably things I would have improved. But the thing about it is you just got to keep moving forward, because once they hit print at the printer, the book is out there.
You'd never go back and rewrite a book or do a new edition of it?
No, I don't think so.
Now, so the big thing, when you get reviews, ratings, from people, how do you feel about them? Do they influence you? Are you paying attention to them? What do you think?
I try not to read reviews, to be honest, and I always read them.
Well, that's being honest. I think that
yep.
Some people really don't. And
I would, what I would say is I think that sometimes you can get good points out of them. I try to focus, I try to be a mostly positive person, so I try to focus in on the positives and what people like about things. One example of that would be Angela White, which is a character who's in all three of my books. She appeared in the first book just by necessity. She sort of popped up about two-thirds of the way through the first book because there was a murder and I needed a detective to investigate it. And so she's in like three or four scenes in that novel. And readers who talked to me about the book like loved her. They were like, oh, Angela White's such a great character. So I brought her back in the second book. I sort of wove a storyline in there for her, and but it was still sort of a minor character. And again, people really liked her as a character. So I thought when I wrote my third book, why don't I listen to those readers and like bring her to the forefront of that novel? So that was really good. You know, and you can obviously you can listen to you can hear hear what people are saying and see if you can respond to them in the in future books. And that's what anyone would do with any you know, with any job. You want to listen to what people are saying and see if you can improve.
Well, for the most part.
Yeah, I don't know about some of those Goodreads reviews. I'm like, okay, no. I you know, there's a it's funny, like there's helpful reviews, and then there's reviews which are just, I don't know, distracting, I guess would be the best word. Hurtful would be. And you're like, well, I don't know. I mean, usually I just find the bad, the really ridiculous bad ones really silly and kind of, in fact, sometimes funny. But, you know, it's always hard. It's always hard to get the feedback, but important, I guess, if it's serious feedback.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. I mean, honestly, people in this day and age, everyone's a critic. And so that's the world that we live in. And I just can't let it. Who is it? Is it Taylor Swift that says haters? What does she say?
Haters going to hate. Yeah.
Haters going to hate.
Yeah, haters going to hate.
That's what I have to say. Haters going to hate. You know, if you look at someone and, you know, they have an average review rating of 1.2 stars, you know, that tells you something about what they're doing with their time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. It's how people can be that way. But it's just something. Is it important if another writer recognizes you?
Oh, like recognizes my writing?
Yeah. If another writer actually gives you a good review or said something good about you, do you look for that? But does that kind of give you some sort of extra boost?
I do like it. I mean, like anytime anyone says anything about me, I have to tell you, I like it. So anytime someone says something nice about me.
I was going to say, you're asking for it.
We're all like human.
I will say this. I try to be really level-headed about feedback. I worked in editorial, you have to understand this. I worked in editorial for 20 years. I worked for a publisher for 20 years. And the writing process is one where I think of it as very collaborative. You have your team of people who you trust to give you good feedback. You have your team of people that you trust to help you push a product forward. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I try to pull these, even like the nastiest Goodreads review, I try to pull that into that whole editorial process. I can read something that's very nasty and discount the parts that I don't need to listen to. And I try to pay attention to the parts that I should listen to. And that's, you know, that's just trying to have a thick skin. And of course I fail at this all the time, but I try as much as I can to do that.
Well, the editor does that too. If you have a good editor, they'll challenge you on a lot of things. And make you realize things. Because, I mean, a good editor just wants a better book, right?
That's absolutely right. That's what we all want. Yep.
Yeah. So I think that's probably a key thing. You know, even for people self-publishing, they need to find a good editor up there.
Oh, gosh. If you're self-publishing, absolutely. Number one thing is you need a great editor. You need someone that you can really bounce ideas off of and who will tell you when your writing isn't working as well as when it is working.
Yeah, that's important. Really important. Yeah. You know, so let's see. Oh, anybody you want to work with? Anybody you'd like to co-write a book with?
Oh my goodness. I'd like to work with any of those people that I mentioned when I was talking about my big influences. I don't know. I wonder what it would, I don't know what it would be like to co-write a book. I think it'd be a really interesting experience. My writing process is so messy. I think I might drive someone crazy. But you know, I'd be open to trying something like that.
It also depends. I'll tell you, for me, one of my first books I wrote with Peter Vronsky, a doctor, and he's well known in the crime business, and so I felt a little bit intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it depends also on your positioning, like where you're coming from at the time.
Mm-hmm.
When you're writing together, and if you really, really like a person's writing, it makes you feel a little bit intimidated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can see that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's an interesting process, but it's one you have to definitely be comfortable with it.
That is an interesting question. No one has asked that before. But it'd be an interesting process to go through.
I would think, because especially in crime fiction, because in crime fiction, you guys are creating the characters that are doing things. So you're writing a story with someone else that their characters, their ideas of a character might be different than yours. Like, so I would think that would be really, I don't know. That would be, I don't know how you'd do that.
I think you'd have to have some sort of good chemistry. Like, I mean, I think it'd be very hard. I don't know if you agree with this, Edwin, very hard to co-author someone that had values that were a little different or sensibilities that were too different from your own. Wouldn't that just be really difficult? I would just think it would be really hard.
Well, I think you'd probably have to come to terms. You'd have to come to terms with that early on, especially.
Yeah.
You know, depending on the topic or the characters that you're developing, you definitely have to figure that out before you even start in.
Yeah, well, you know, John, I guess you're not going to be writing with Donald Trump in the future, eh?
No.
Well, you know,
I don't think so.
Gregory Ashe and Carol Poe wrote together.
Yeah.
But they kind of did it unique, right? The way they both had their own characters, and then they interplayed them, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Rather
mm-hmm.
than stepping on toes, they worked together. So it was an interesting.
They actually worked in the same Google document, which I thought was fascinating. Like, that would be, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done through my teaching work a lot of collaboration through Google, but to sit down and do something creative sounds, you know. I was very impressed to learn that.
Yeah, and they did a good job. So, you know,
yeah.
Crazy. Okay, Edwin. So now, do you have a website or a place that you'd like people to come and find you and find out more about you?
Yeah, you can come to my website. I'm at edwin-hill.com. And, you know, I'm on Facebook and Instagram and what is the other one? Twitter. You can find me at Edwin Hill Author at all three of those things. And yeah, I love to hear from writers, readers and writers. So feel free to drop me a note.
Well, great. You know, we're going to have that up on our website so people listening can one click and they'll find you. And by all means, stalk him, give him bad reviews, do it all.
I don't give bad reviews.
he's open to everything. He really wants to hear from everybody. Just get on there and flood that website.
Absolutely.
Well, our guest today has been the crime fiction author Edwin Hill. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was great talking with both of you.
Thanks, Edwin.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.